This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
There are rumors flying around. To make sense of it all, we bring in Ryan Dunleavy from the New York Post, NFL writer. Ryan, how are you?
Good, Lori. How are you doing?
Good. I wanted to start with Matthew Stafford and what's the latest going on there, where it sounds like are the Rams allowing his agent to understand his value? That's the latest that I had read today. What does that mean?
Yeah, so the way it goes is the Rams are going to let him see what other people would offer him in terms of a contract extension. That's really the root of it, right? The Rams don't want to get rid of Matthew Stafford, but they're not looking to pay him a big extension. He wants to be paid, I believe he's at $40 million, which was, everybody Giants fans should remember, the old Daniel Jones APY, $40 million. Mm-hmm. He's the 15th highest APY quarterback in the NFL. I'm sure, I don't know this, I don't know what numbers he was, I'm sure he's looking to get into the $50 million a year range where everybody else is. On a short-term deal, you know, we're not talking 6 years or something like that. He's 37, but he wants more money up front now and a higher APY. He's only actually of the $40 million APY, he's only getting $26 million in salary this year. So he's well below where he should be in the hierarchy. So yeah, they're going to allow the Jimmy Sexton, his agent at CAA, to talk to other teams and see what kind of extension they would be talking about with Matthew Stafford. And I would imagine he'll bring that back to the Rams and say, this is what other teams are willing to pay. If you're not willing to pay it, then you should try to work out a deal with one of these teams. I would think teams would be hesitant to do the Rams' homework and bidding for them. That's what the Rams have going for them in this, is that other teams might say, no. Let's work out a trade first, and then I'll work out the contract extension. I'm not going to decide your player's market for you, so that all you have to do is then say if you match it.
So with that, which makes sense, what you're saying, what's the likelihood that Matthew Stafford actually gets traded?
I would say less than 50-50, but it's not crazy, right? Like, this isn't 7 years ago where, like, franchise quarterbacks were never on the move. Like, we've seen Tom Brady change teams. We've seen mm-hmm. Aaron Rodgers change teams. We've seen Kirk Cousins, if you want to put him in the Matthew Stafford category, changes. Like, quarterbacks change teams now all the time, especially in their late 30s. So, like, I don't think it's zero. I think it's probably like 40% that he moves. I think there's a chance that some team, and it very well could be the Giants, because they're desperate and they're in an urgent timeline with a coach and a GM who need to win now, say, yeah, we'll give you, you know, 3 years and $150 million. And the Rams say, well, we're not going to do that. And then the two teams have to work out a trade compensation. So I'd say 40%. I'd say if it's a slight raise, if a team says, no, we're not doing this and Stafford can't find it, then the Rams will probably end up just giving him a slight raise. Or if a team says, yeah, we'll work out a 3-45, then the Rams might say, yeah, you know what, that's worth doing. We're so close to the Super Bowl. I think cooler heads probably prevail and he's on the Rams because, like, does he really want to start over? He's 37. Does he really want to go to a team that's rebuilding and finish out his career that way? And they were the only team that even came close to competing with the Eagles in the playoffs. Yep. They're not that far from going to the Super Bowl in the NFC. Do they really want to start over with some rookie or some journeyman or Aaron Rodgers, who is like the most popular name for them? Like, you're going to swap out Stafford for Rodgers? Did you get any better?
No, I would say you got worse if at this point. Not of course, their prime peak career. You know, if this were, I don't know, 6-7 years ago, you take Aaron Rodgers, but it's not. So, all right, now if Stafford, let's say 40% chance of being traded, would you want him on the Giants and the Jets if he were the Jets? Like, does he make sense for both teams?
There's no buzz in the NFL about him going to the Jets.
Okay.
To me, that would, yeah, yeah. So I'll start with that. Yes. To me, yes. Because as I've told you on your show before, like, I think the Jets are really, really good. So, like, I don't know. The coaching didn't work out last year. The quarterback, whatever, wasn't the right fit. His stats weren't as good. His stats were better than he actually played. Whatever you want to say for why the Jets were a disaster last year. But I think the talent's really good. So, like, yes, I would want him on the Jets because I think you put him on the Jets and I'd be right back to where I was in 2023, where I was like, oh, this team is a, you know, win a playoff game, Final Four in the AFC kind of team. That's how I would feel about them with Matthew Stafford. But there's literally no buzz about that. I think the Jets are in the start Tyrod Taylor or somebody or Justin Fields and maybe draft a day two quarterback and slow build it back up and cure all our other issues. Let's get Garrett Wilson happy and re-signed. Let's get Sauce Gardner re-signed. Let's take care of all the other things in our house, and then we'll worry about our quarterback, which is a viable way to go. So I would love to see him on the Jets, though, because I think they could be pretty good. The Giants, I would do it because of the situation they're in. Like, you have to figure out what you want to be if you're the Giants. Are you building for a long-term, sustainable, winning franchise? Or are you just trying to be relevant again? They're so irrelevant right now, Lori. When you ask people, I was at the Super Bowl for a week, and you're asking people about the Giants, and they're so far off other people's radars. They're so, like, the talent's bad. Everybody's on the hot seat. They just expect the worst from the Giants. So, like, if you have Matthew Stafford, what's the floor? You probably win 6 or 7 games, and you're like, so you can convince yourself you're in a wild card race in early December, and so you're relevant again. And I think that's really what the Giants are trying to do right now, almost more so than build a sustainable winner. So, yeah, I would probably do it if I was those guys and my job was at stake.
So after I'm done talking to you at some point between now and 1 a.m. when I go off the air, I will probably go on a rant on how the Giants and making a play for Matthew Stafford goes against every fiber in my being on how I normally like to think as a sports fan or a strategist that, you know, from a media perspective looks at teams, that in between no man's land with a team that's not ready to win and you're just getting a quarterback to be respectable, that doesn't make sense to me, generally speaking. However, the 2024 Giants, the way the last decade has largely gone, and the 2024 Giants have gotten me to rethink that point of view, which I still hold is the right one in general. But 2020, you know, the 100th anniversary season being arguably the most disappointing and depressing season in Giants history. And then you look at the difficulty of next year's schedule and you know, usually it's the Jets that I think of as that team that you say, would it be worth it to just make the playoffs for a year? And the answer would be yes, because they haven't been to the playoffs in 14 years. Making the playoffs one season for your fan base is something that does matter. That would be a good thing to do. For the Giants, it's less about that. They went to the playoffs just a few years ago. But not being as depressing, and as you said, I think the Giants are bad and boring. There's bad and, like, exciting, interesting. Yeah. There's a train wreck, bad. The Jets are usually sort of train wreck, bad, interesting, bad. The Giants are bad and boring. And to be that in New York just feels like Matthew Stafford might be a life preserver. That's how I'm looking at this situation right now.
I think that's how they're looking at the situation. I think that's how I'm looking at the situation. Like, I agree with you. Like, that's not a long-term answer. It's a Band-Aid on a problem. But, like, even the Giants' Band-Aids haven't stuck for 10 years. So, like, if they can do something right, I think John Mara on down would be on board with, all right, now we've fixed the quarterback issue for a while. Now let's see, with a quarterback we know is good, maybe our offensive line looks better. Maybe Malik Nabers is even better than we thought. Yep. Maybe Tyrone Tracy is a running back one. He gives them 2 years, let's say, to find out about the rest of their team, which I think would be a positive for them, even though they're not winning a Super Bowl. They might not even make the playoffs, but they could just calm the waters and be less of a punchline, and that's where they are right now.
Yeah, and I think the airplane stopped flying over, you know, the stadium for a year. Like, it takes all of that down a notch, and you're right. I think the offensive line, yeah, they still need to probably patch a hole or two, but it would actually, if Andrew Thomas is healthy, they don't have to be, the offensive line doesn't have to be dreadful if you had a decent quarterback back there. All right, but this is Combine Week. It is about prospects. It is about draft choices. The Giants picking number 3 overall, and I know you'll be heading out, you know, it's Indianapolis, everybody heading out there. What, as you look at this week, one story that just popped is that Shedeur Sanders, who right now commonly regarded as the second best quarterback prospect in this draft, maybe not by everybody, but that seems to be what most people are saying. He announced he will not throw or work out. He's just going to do the interviews. Do you know if Cam Ward has said whether he is throwing and working out?
I have not. I have not seen anything about that. I imagine that'll probably come out tomorrow. And I don't think it will. Like, to jump to your question, Lori, which is going to be like, I don't even know if people realize it. Like, nobody throws at the combine anymore.
Right.
Last year, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, and Drake May all didn't throw at the combine and went, 1, 2, and 3, right? So, and like the year before that, I would have to look it up, but I don't think CJ Stroud or Bryce Young threw
Stroud, at the Stroud did, I can tell you, because I remember Stroud throwing at the combine because he threw, unless I'm hallucinating, Stroud threw well at the combine and was impressive. But to your point,
Will Levis did, and he fell all the way down to the 34th pick.
Right. It doesn't usually happen. And the way I was thinking, you know, I saw some people criticizing Shedeur Sanders, but this is all about strategy and doing what's best for you. And, you know, I'm sure plenty of people would love to watch him throw at the combine, but if you already know you're commonly going somewhere likely in the top 10 and you are the number 2 ranked quarterback in this draft, yeah, of course, he's doing the right thing for himself. Throw it Colorado's, you know, pro day. That makes sense. So that doesn't surprise me. But do you think him not throwing there, does this matter at all for teams? If you were interested in him, weren't you planning on going to his pro day anyway?
Correct. It means nothing to teams. Like, less than nothing to teams. Yeah, right. It sucks for fans. It sucks for media because we don't get to see him throw and probably, you know, I wasn't at Colorado 6 times this fall.
Right.
The Giants pretty much had like a residence in Boulder this fall. That's how often they saw Shedeur Sanders, whether it's practice or games or whatnot. The Giants have plenty of firsthand looks from their whole scouting department on Shedeur Sanders, and then they'll get one other one at his pro day. So, no, it does not matter at all to any team. It's not oh, this guy's afraid of competition, or he doesn't want to throw to receivers he doesn't usually work with. None of that is true. Everybody understands that this is what the top prospects do. They can only hurt themselves more than they help themselves, so they are certainly not going to put themselves in that position. It's actually even becoming more common for other top 10 players that aren't quarterbacks to sit out drills. Marvin Harrison Jr. did it last year.
That's right.
It wouldn't surprise me if somebody, you know, some other top 10 prospect who's not a quarterback decided to sit them out this week too.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. Abdul Carter had been struggling with some injury. I mean, played through it at the end of the year with Penn State, but...
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I don't know. Does he really need to, lift weights, you know, or something? Fat in her shoulder.
He certainly doesn't need to go out there and bang a bag for people to be like, oh, wow, this guy is a top man. No, he's going to be the first or second pick regardless,
right,
as long as he's not hurt.
Right. Talking to Ryan Dunleavy about the NFL Combine, about the draft, about prospects coming up, and it does seem that most it's up to teams, and all it takes is one team to love the player X over player Y. But it seems like most draft scout evaluators and mock drafts and people that we hear about seem to have Miami quarterback Cam Ward ranked as QB1 in this draft and Shedeur Sanders as QB2. From the rumors we're hearing about the Giants and this, as you said, residency love affair with Shedeur Sanders, are you under the impression that they prefer Shedeur Sanders over Cam Ward, or is this something where, you know what, these are smoke screens, they didn't think Cam Ward would be available, they haven't decided yet? What are you hearing?
Here's what I'd tell you. I think that when they have their meetings, their final meetings to finalize their board, and if they got to a situation where, you know, they thought both guys were going to be available to them that last week, I think there will be very intense debate in that building. I don't think they will reach a unanimous decision. Now, it's going to ultimately be Joe Shane's opinion who he wants to pick. But I think if you pulled, let's say, six guys from the Giants facility, put an area scout, a director of college personnel, an assistant GM, a player personnel guy, and you gave them six, I wouldn't be surprised if it's 3-3 or 4-2. So I think there'll be very contested debate. I don't think there will be a unanimous decision on which quarterback we like. And as Hard Knock showed us, Joe Shane kind of listens to everybody in his inner circle and then goes with his gut, no matter what other people are telling him. So I think it'll be really who Joe Shane prefers, but I think he'll have people in his inner circle who are making arguments for Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders.
Would you be worried that with, as you said, Joe Shane, Brian Daboll, both, we know, GM, head coach, on the hot seat, pressure from the owner, that this team has to win more than they have, show progress, that they would be more likely to take the quarterback with maybe less upside potential, but who they thought was more ready to win now?
Yeah. I would be, yes. And the perception around scouts is that Shedeur is more ready right now and that Cam Ward has a higher ceiling as a prospect. Yes, that would worry me. And look, when the day they were all brought back, the only two questions I think I asked anybody were, I asked John Mara, are you guaranteeing these guys more than 1 year? Because if not, they're going to make a decision where they, A, have to pick a quarterback, and to your point, they're going to pick the most ready quarterback because they don't even have another quarterback. They're certainly not going to roll into week one with if they re-sign a Drew Lock or a Jacoby Ellsbury. No, they're going to play their number one pick. So yeah, that would worry me. And I asked Joe Shane in the same question, and that's when we all got our no self-preservation Hail Mary quote that he said. And I think he's, it's going to be a
semantics thing, and if he's going to say he didn't make any self-preservation Hail Marys, but Matthew Stafford feels like one, and spending a lot of money in free agency on a 3-win team feels like one, and picking a quarterback because you think he's more ready right now would feel like one. You have to do your full evaluation, and you know, like you said, like it was Drake May, Jaden Daniels last year. I'm sure part of that decision was who's most ready now, but I'm sure most of it was long-term thinking. I don't know if they can have as much long-term thinking this year as they would have on May versus Daniels.
And finally, what are you most looking forward to in Indianapolis? Can you describe the meetings that will happen this week and maybe some of the things that fans won't see? You know, the Underwear Olympics, fans get to see who runs a faster 40, who jumps higher, three cone drills, things like that. But what's the real work that is happening both from the team standpoint and even for you as a reporter out there?
Well, the real work that happens for the team standpoint is, look, don't get me wrong, they watch the Underwear Olympics, so to speak, but you also see videos of the guys where they're like closing their eyes in the stands while they're while the guys are done. Like, they've done most of their athletic work. The real work for the teams is I think it's 20 minute meetings, it might be 15, that they get with each prospect each night.
I think it's 15, but yeah.
Yeah, and they might have expanded it to 20.
Okay.
It's one or the other. But they get a couple hours with, I think it's 45 prospects or something per team. And those are really, you know, you saw bits and pieces of those on Hard Knocks. You've seen them on team videos where that's really where they try to make the guy uncomfortable, or they put him on a quarterback will go on a whiteboard and have to draw a play, or any guy with a character issue, they'll be asked about, you know, for background on, hey, what happened in this incident, that kind of thing. So really, teams go out there for those couple hours with the prospects. That's what they care most about. And for me, it's two different jobs. It's 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. with the prospects, us asking our questions, shouting them from, you know, behind rows of cameras, and then eat lunch, take a nap, and then it's 9 p.m. to 3 a.m. out at bars in Indianapolis, trying to meet up with agents and coaches and executives and find out what they're hearing about the Giants or the Jets or the league. Where do you think Myles Garrett's going to go? Do you believe the Matthew Stafford stuff is real? And just trying to get the non-podium background information that makes stories at this time of year. Just working those restaurants and bars. Trying to find league sources with stuff to know. I remember one year I was at somewhere late at night, and that's when I found out the Giants were going to force Sterling Shepard to take a pay cut, and it hadn't come out yet. I wrote that story at like 2:30 in the morning or something because I found it out at like a hotel lobby or something like that. So that's really where the information comes out of it, Indianapolis. It isn't from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. It's after that.
All right. Well, safe travels out there. Ryan Dunleavy from the New York Post. Great stuff. If you're not following him, you should, in the paper or online on social. Ryan, appreciate the time. We'll catch up with you soon.
Thanks, Lori.